Hello, and welcome to the Dance Physio Podcast, a podcast designed to explore ideas and foster discussion around dancer health and wellness. We're here to challenge the status quo, bridge the gap between dance science and the studio, and help change the landscape of the dance industry for the better. I'm your host, Erica Mayall, a dancer turned physiotherapist who is deeply passionate about leaving the dance world better than I found it. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Dance Physio Podcast. Just before we get started today, I wanted to say a huge thank you to everybody who has left a rating for the podcast so far. People have been rating it on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever they are listening to the podcast. I would love it and be so appreciative if anybody would be willing to take a minute to go and leave a review as well. Reviews really, really help the so-called algorithm, or just help other people to find the podcast on those platforms so they prioritize podcasts that have more reviews and more ratings. So certainly ratings are amazing, but actually leaving like a review with written comments ranks a little bit higher. So if you could take a second right now to pop over to whatever platform you are listening to this week's podcast on, leave a review. I would really appreciate it. And then come back and listen to the rest of the episode. So this was not the episode that I had originally planned to record today. So I kind of have a little bit of a rough outline of like what I'm recording sort of coming up. And this was not today's original plan, but this conversation has been coming up over and over and over again in the clinic. It's been coming up on social media just in the last like week or two. And then yesterday I had coffee with one of my mentors and an old teacher of mine, and it came up again. So I really felt like today I was going to switch what I was recording for the podcast and dive into this topic instead. And this is the idea of, we don't run the marathon before we run the marathon. And I'll explain that quote in a second and where it came from. But really what we are going to get into today is the concept of tapering as it pertains to dance. So tapering in itself is a concept that falls within the whole concept of like periodization in terms of how we look at training load management and training cycles and things like that. So there is a podcast episode entirely about periodization and like what that could look like in the dance world and in the dance industry. So I will link that episode in the show notes. So if you haven't listened to that episode, I would encourage you to do so because it will give you a much better idea of what periodization looks like throughout like a bigger kind of like macro cycle. So if we're looking at like training in terms of like an entire year. But one of the concepts that pertains to periodization is this idea and this concept of tapering. And tapering is the intentional decline in training load and training intensity. So basically volume, how much we're training and how intense we're training in preparation for an upcoming event. So in dance, those events are often competitions. And that's what's been coming up recently because we're right in the throes of like the most intense part of our competition season here in Vancouver, where I am. So the intentional decrease of training volume, training intensity prior to a competition, or this also pertains to performances or other things where we want the dancers to be able to peak or perform at their best at a set point in time or a set period of time. So in dance, we're really looking generally at competitions or performances. This might also apply to like exams or things like that if you have dancers participating in those types of things. So that is what tapering is. In reality, we don't see a lot of tapering in the dance world. And if anything, we see the opposite. And this is what's been coming up, especially in the clinic over the past couple of weeks, but specifically like the past week or 10 days. This has been like a really big sort of topic of conversation because in the dance world, oftentimes what we do is actually the exact opposite of tapering. What we do is we throw in all of these extra rehearsals and practices and run-throughs right before the event with the thought or the idea that we're going to like
improve the outcome or improve the performance of that dancer. So let's just run it one more time. Okay, we need to keep cleaning this piece of the number. Like, you know, we have to make sure that you don't like forget any of the corrections, like whatever the reasons are for throwing in all of these extra rehearsals. They really ultimately have the opposite of effect most of the time of what we actually think that they are going to. And I'm going to dive into some of the reasons for that. So culturally within the dance world, we really often ramp up our training and really throw a lot of extra intensity, a lot of extra hours, these like last minute, last ditch rehearsals at dancers. But in pretty much every other athletic endeavor, the opposite is true. We see tapering built into training programming and periodization. And so that's where this quote came from. And I think a lot of people are familiar with like running or training for a marathon and maybe heard of this idea of tapering, that in the last, it's usually about 2 weeks out from race day, the mileage that runners are training at, like that they're running at, decreases significantly. So their longest training run, and a marathoner isn't going to run marathon distance before the race, but they'll run something that's coming close-ish to marathon distance. Their longest run is usually about 2 weeks out from race day. And then that's not to say they don't run at all in those 2 weeks, but they will gradually decrease how much they are running and at what intensity they are running at, so that they are in peak physical condition on race day. And so that's the idea of this. We don't run the marathon before we run the marathon. Like in marathon training, you do not ever really run a marathon distance before you run the marathon. Now, dance is obviously different because we have to complete an entire piece before we perform it. Like we're not going to choreograph 90% of a dance and just be like, well, the last 10% you'll figure out on stage. Like that's not going to happen. So we are going to be going through and doing like a full dance or a full performance or what have you, but we can manipulate that training volume and training intensity to build these tapers in. So that quote of you don't run the marathon before you run the marathon came from a friend of mine, Catherine Varga, who is a physical therapist in the US who works a lot with dancers, and she just kind of said it a bit offhand at an IADAMS conference. I believe it was the one in Ireland. Was it Ireland? I think it was Ireland. Anyway, and it was in regards to like a presentation that she was giving that was mostly about sort of like cross training and stuff in dancers. It was a movement session. It was a great session. And she just kind of like threw that comment out there. And it really landed with me in that like, it is just like so absurd in the dance world that we really don't like incorporate some of these concepts that are so ingrained and really quite basic when we look at like athletic populations. Now, I will say that in artistic sports, like figure skating or gymnastics, they maybe don't do as good a job of tapering as something like athletics, like running and things like that, where it's just like built into like a marathon or half marathon training plan. But they are really starting to build into that, like build that into their programming a lot more. So I was listening to a podcast, and now I can't for the life of me remember what podcast it was, where they were interviewing gymnasts. And so they were just talking about like over the course of their career, how their training had changed and things like that. And one of the key things was that they were like performing so much better later on in their career because they had learned to implement some of these sports science principles and this idea of like tapering and like recovery being super, super paramount to their ability to perform at the top level. And I cannot remember who the gymnast on the podcast was. But anyway, if I figure that out, I will also link that in the show notes. But no promises on that regard. So, like I said, we might see a little bit less of this tapering in artistic sports, but even they do a better job than in dance, where in dance there is this culture of just drilling things and throwing in all of these extra rehearsals. I want to dive a little bit into like why it is that we want to taper, like what the kind of benefits and effects of that are, just so people understand like why it is that this is a phenomenon that is, you know, in sports science and in the sports world, because it really does lead to enhanced performance. And if we want our dancers to be performing at their top level and to the best of their abilities, we're doing them a disservice by not incorporating these concepts. And if anything, we're probably decreasing their performance by throwing in tons of these extra rehearsals right before competition day or right before performance day. So really the biggest benefit, or like the sort of key benefit of tapering, is that it allows the body to recover and be able to like optimize its ability to perform in the days or potentially weeks leading up to an event. Now, I know I said with marathon running that their taper starts about 2 weeks out and kind of like tapers into a marathon. Dance performance in general, so I mean, if you're performing a full-length ballet, arguably that can be like a two-hour event, but for the most part, when we're looking at like competitive dancers, our dances are only, you know, 3 to max 4 minutes long, maybe even 2.5 minutes long. We don't necessarily need to have a taper that is 2 weeks long. So if we're thinking about competition, so like a competition week or a competition weekend, that taper in terms of decreasing our intensity and decreasing our like volume of training can really just be like 2 or 3 days before that event. And the same would go for performances. And depending on how intense the performance run is, maybe the taper varies in length. So if you're going into a super long run of, I don't know, like a Swan Lake or something with a classical ballet company, and you know that you're doing 18 shows over 2 weeks and there's double show days and things like that, you may need a longer taper. Like your body may need more time to recover and to be able to optimize performance before you go into that intense run, versus if it's a more studio show and it's like, okay, we have a show weekend coming up and we're going to do 2 shows one day and 1 show the next day, so it's 3 shows over 2 days. Your taper in that case, again, could just be a couple of days. It does not have to be this 2 week long thing where we're like missing out on training blocks or that type of thing. So like I said, the idea behind tapering is that it allows our body to recover and really then be able to perform at the highest level. There's things that are happening physically in the body while we are going through a taper, and there's also things that are happening more mentally as we go through these periods of decreased training before an event. So physically, one of the biggest benefits and one of the things that we see is we have less fatigue in the body. We know that fatigue is one of the number one risk factors for injuries. So more injuries happen when a dancer is in a fatigue state, whether that is the end of a class, the end of a rehearsal day, the end of a performance run. We see increased injury rates with increased fatigue. So decreasing fatigue in the body is going to be really, really beneficial for from the perspective of decreasing risk of injuries. It also decreases the load on the body and specifically on like our joints and our tendons and our ligaments and our muscles and things like that, so that they can recover during that period of time and then be able to perform maximally on the days we need them to, so at the competition or at the performance. If we're training really intensely going into a competition, we might not be recovering 100% when it comes to those tissues in the body, so ligaments, tendons, things like that. And so maybe those tendons or ligaments, those tissues, let's say, maybe they are only 80% recovered. So when we're then asking this dancer to perform on stage, they are not going to be able to give 100% if their body is only at like 80% of max capacity or whatever the arbitrary number is. So having a period of tapering beforehand allows the body to recover back to sort of like ideally 100% so that they can then perform at 100% when they are on stage. We get improved efficiency within the body, and specifically within like the energy systems within the body. So we have like our aerobic system and our anaerobic system. And for, again, us to be able to perform at 100% or for us to be able to perform the most efficiently, we need our body to be able to utilize those energy systems like in the most efficient way possible. And we can promote that efficiency through this kind of rest and recovery that happens with tapering. Along the lines of that as well, we get a restoration of glycogen store. So glycogen is one of the like energy units that your body uses. It's basically like fuel for your body. And our body needs to be able to store up certain amounts of that to then be able to, again, exert like max power, max effort. And if we're constantly training or overtraining the body, we like deplete those stores. Even if a dancer is trying to fuel their body properly during those periods of time, you're still depleting those stores and potentially then going into a performance or a competition, not being able to perform at 100%. So those are just a few of the things that happen from a like more physical perspective. From a more mental perspective, in terms of having this like period of tapering, we decrease the amount of mental fatigue or burnout that happens. Like, especially with dancers, and you see this like maybe even towards like the middle to later end of competition season, if dancers have run their dances like, I don't know, 600 times by that point in the season, I'm just like pulling a random number out, it's probably actually significantly more than that, you will often see that they are just like mentally exhausted with that dance and like burned out with it. And oftentimes their performance will then suffer as a result. And you'll see it in class, and you hear it from teachers as well, where they're getting a bit frustrated and they're like, you know, the dance should be improving. They should be getting better. They should be like growing throughout the season. And really it feels stale. It feels stagnant. It feels, you know, like they're not getting to the level that the teacher wants them to get to. And that is often a sign of being like over rehearsed, or they've just gotten to the point of like mental burnout or mental fatigue where they cannot take on board any more corrections. Like, the dance at that point is likely not going to improve a whole lot more. So we see that this is sort of like more of the like mental or cognitive perspective. When people participate in periods of tapering or have that like increased recovery, we actually see increased memory that happens. And so if we have those dancers who are like not taking on corrections, where you're like, I've told you the same correction 12 times, and like they just are not, it seems like they're not applying or they're not trying, it may not be that they're not trying. It may be that they truly are in a, you know, fatigued enough state that their memory just like isn't working how it normally would be, or their nervous system is like dysregulated enough that they cannot take on like these corrections. We also, in those states, if they're in these like kind of like overly fatigued states, we'll see decreased coordination. So all of a sudden, things that like normally wouldn't have been difficult for them, or like things that would normally look clean and smooth and easy, will potentially not. And so if we can incorporate these periods of taper and really promote that rest and recovery right before we want them to perform maximally, we will see better coordination in our dancers than we do when they're in that sort of like fatigued or over-rehearsed state in through there. So this list is certainly not exhaustive. There are loads and loads and loads of benefits of incorporating this taper and really like mindfully decreasing the intensity and volume of training that we're doing prior to a competition. But I know that we are going to have teachers especially, but even dancers and parents, who push back against this because they feel like, well, what are we going to do? Like, we want to go in being as prepared as possible. And in the dance world, a lot of people seem to think that the way to be best prepared is to like literally just run the dances over and over again and drill them. Like, it's almost this idea of like drilling these routines until they become like a little bit like robotic almost, or yeah, just like these, like you almost lose a tiny bit of like the aspect of the artistry when it becomes sort of like to that level. So there are different things that you can do that can really help to like enhance dancers' performance that also allow us to accomplish the goal of tapering during these times. So that's not to say that, so let's say we're tapering for 2 or 3 days before a competition week starts. That's not to say that we have to cancel every single class and rehearsal and we're just like, okay, they're all going to sit at home, like, and sit on the couch for 2 days and then come in and dance. Like, that's not the idea. But during those classes and rehearsals, A, maybe we cut the hours a little bit shorter. If your dancers are normally there for, let's say, 4 hours in a day or 5 hours in a day, maybe they come into the studio for just 2 hours on those days instead. So we condense their schedule, so they're not there for as long. That gives them an opportunity to prioritize sleep, to prioritize making sure that all of their costume bits are ready, all of their makeup's ready, all of their, you know, they've packed. If it's something they have to travel for, they can prioritize their nutrition, thinking about, okay, what snacks and things am I going to pack with myself to fuel myself during this competition week? Dancers need time for all of that. And it is not unusual to see dancers who, A, are at the studio for all of these extra rehearsals for extra hours over on top of what they're usually training, and then also having to go home and do all of these things. So then they're staying up way later than they maybe normally would. They're not getting a good night's sleep. They have to wake up early to travel the first day of the competition, whatever like the scenario may be. If we intentionally decrease the kind of duration of the rehearsals that they have during those days, that gives them time to prioritize all of those other things that are necessary to be able to perform or compete at their highest level while not stressing them out. Because really, if we are making dancers cram that into time that they do not have available to them in the day, they're just going to be like more stressed out, and that's going to have a negative effect on their performance. So we can decrease the duration. When we are rehearsing, when they are coming into the studio, we also want to decrease the intensity of those rehearsals. So maybe we run through a few times marking it. If there's certain corrections, or you want to work on formation, or there's like something specific that still needs to be polished, that still needs to be worked on. Realistically, if we're 2 to 3 days out from a competition, those things should be sorted. At this point, your dancers should know their places, they should know their formations, and like the choreography should be set and all of those types of things. And if that's not the case and that's happening really regularly, then maybe if you are a teacher, you need to take a look at like your kind of like planning for the season and having different deadlines of like when your choreography is going to be finished by or that type of thing. But in the vast majority of cases, all that stuff is done by this point, and we're just like running the dances almost for the sake of running the dances. Like oftentimes I don't think that there is like a clear goal in mind with running them other than thinking that if we do these over and over and over again, they're magically going to get better and better and better. And that is often not the case. So in these rehearsals, if we're still holding them, we want them to be shorter in duration. We want them to be less in intensity. So we might say, okay, we're only going to run through the dance once at full intensity, or maybe 3 times, whatever it is, but it doesn't need to be just drilled over and over and over again at full intensity. So just something to think about in terms of, okay, like what do my rehearsals look like in the days, and especially the day or two right before a competition? There's lots of other things that you can do to fill that time. If you have the dancers at the studio, they're there for regular class time, and you're like, okay, but their parents still expect them to be participating in a class, and the dancers still want to be like engaged and improving and make sure that they are going to be able to perform at their optimal level. So other things that we can do that are probably going to enhance their performance more than just drilling these dances over and over again are things like potentially watching video of the dances. If they've already competed that season, this is a great time to like review some of the adjudications and watch the videos back and hear some of those critiques just to remind them of what those corrections were. I'm sure at this point, if it's, you know, not your first competition of the season, you've probably already gone through the adjudications and incorporated those corrections, but this is a great time to remind the dancers of the corrections that you made and why you made them based on adjudication from previous competitions. If it is a performance more so than a competition, maybe you have video footage from, you know, previous rehearsals in the prior weeks or things like that, and it's a great time to review that so the dancers can sort of see, oh, you know what, in that section our like formations were maybe like not as clean as they should be, or our timing was off in this section. So cognitively, they're still going to be improving and like looking at and analyzing their performances, but from a physical perspective, they are not exerting themselves to the same level. You could use this time to focus on sort of like recovery or like regenerative sessions for the body. So maybe we work on like, you know, gentle mobility stuff. Maybe we're working on some like release type activities. Maybe we're working on, you know, you could incorporate like yoga or meditation or things like that. So there's things that you can incorporate that are going to help the dancers be like in the best possible place that they can be to be able to perform, that aren't going to be as physically taxing on their body as just like drilling extra rehearsals and things like that. And another one, actually, this one's huge, is imagery. So using imagery is such a powerful tool for performance enhancement. And in fact, imagery is really fascinating. And I will try and do a whole podcast episode on like the use of imagery in dance. But there is so much research to show the effects that imagery has on performance enhancement. So you can use that tool to really help your dancers hone in on their performance. And there's loads of different ways that you can do this. One of the ways that is really great when you're kind of incorporating it into a taper is having all the dancers like in the studio, like, and potentially like even lying on the floor, like eyes closed. So they're like in a really comfortable position as if they were going to like do some meditation or breathing or things like that. Eyes are closed, you turn the music on, and all of them run through the dance mentally in their head. And you can give them different tasks to work on while they're doing that. So maybe you do that three times. And the first time you want them to really focus on what their timing is going to be while they're doing it. So as they're visualizing and doing this mental imagery, it's timing that is their goal or their focus of what they're focusing on. And maybe the second time you run through it, it's like spacing and formations and where they need to be on stage. And so really thinking about like their spot in the dance and how they're getting from point A to point B and all of those types of things. And maybe the third time you run through it, it's like their headlines or, you know, whatever it is that those dancers need to work on. If you've been working on them trying to be sharper and crisper and cleaner in their like movements or their arms or things like that, you can give them a specific task to focus on while they're doing this mental imagery and running through it as the music plays. I love going to competitions nowadays because I often, like if you're backstage, there will be so many dancers and you'll just see them like, you know, they have their costumes on, they're all ready to go and they have headphones in and you can see that they're doing like imagery or visualization kind of like and going through the dance, but they're not actually dancing it. They're just like doing the imagery and visualization. And it's so cool to see that in practice. But I see that mostly being done in like dancers who are competing solos. So it's all very individual backstage, but this can be such a powerful tool for group dances as well, where we, you know, do it as a group and put their music on and have them do this visualization. You can do it, like they don't have to be lying down on the ground with their eyes closed. It's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is that you could do it where they're like standing up, they're in their spots and they're kind of like marking the dance, but they're really visualizing in their head. So maybe they're moving around in the formation a little bit, but they're not actually dancing. It's still visualization, but it's a little bit more active. There's a little bit more embodiment of it if they're moving like from place to place on the stage in terms of like where their spot would be. So like I said, imagery is really cool. There's really cool research and science behind it. I will try and do an episode specifically on that coming up in the next little while, but definitely something to consider that you could incorporate during a taper as you're sort of going through those days of tapering before a competition or before a performance. So I thought this was going to be a very short episode. I was like, oh, I'll just come on and talk about tapering for like 10 or 15 minutes. It is turning out to be almost half an hour. So I'm going to wrap things up there. But I just want to leave you with a final thought of, I think in the dance world, we need to recognize when good is good enough. And so again, I think there's this idea that it's like if we run it one more time or we just do it one more time, it's going to get better, it's going to get cleaner, it's going to get whatever. And in reality, what we actually often see is the opposite. There is at some point an inability for us to take on board more corrections or to like make things better, and especially at the last minute, like running something the night before a competition and making a dancer stay at the studio till 11 p.m. to run these dances over and over again really has negative returns on it. It is not going to be beneficial. So we really need to look at, okay, have we, you know, in the months leading up to these performances or competitions, have we used our time efficiently? Have we done everything to the best of our ability in terms of making sure that things are up to our standard and are clean and whatever? And if the answer is yes, then maybe that's good enough. Maybe then we focus on enjoying the performance and really being able to like showcase what it is that you've been working on rather than trying to continue to perfect something that, as we know in dance, we cannot perfect. There is no such thing as perfection in dance. Yes, we can strive for excellence, but perfection does not exist. So us running things over and over and over again is not going to lead to perfection. So at some point we have to recognize what good enough is, and like just that concept of striving for excellence, and then prioritize other aspects of dancer health and well-being. So that will be my final thought for today. Thank you so much for listening. I would love it if you have questions, comments, or even just want to chime in on this conversation. I've posted about this on social media before, and I probably will again after this episode. And it is always one of the topics that gets the most amount of engagement, both positive, like people agreeing, but also pushback, because there are so many people where this is just like so ingrained in the culture of dance. So if you want to be part of the conversation, please feel free to send me a message. I love discussing and chatting about this stuff because it is nuanced in dance. It's not as simple as marathon running where it's like, just decrease your mileage and you'll be fine. It's not the same, but it is something that I think we can do a better job of incorporating into the dance world, and our dancers will benefit if we do. So thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate your support. I know you could be doing so many other things with your time, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.